ameliorate the effects on the person that is late with the payment, say. There will be ways to get out of the wage withholding if they were just 10 days late or something like that and they meet other specified criteria. But otherwise, quite frankly, the Congress has decreed that you will have wage withholding. It is a sledgehammer.
If we decided as a public policy in Oregon that we felt these people deserve 60 days instead of 30 days, would we lose the federal funding?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bunn, it is required in federal statute and federal regulation. The federal government could step in and assess a penalty against Oregon for failure to comply with that statute and regulation. Yes, you could lose up to $6.6 million eventually of federal match.
As a follow-up then, how many other states have implemented this?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not knowledgeable about how many have done that. I know a number have done it. I do not have an exact figure. Mr. Sitzman might have more as president of the 4D directors of the United States.
Mr. Chairman, I do not have good figures on it. I've talked to several of my counterparts, the directors in the other states. Many states have enacted the necessary legislation. Iowa, just trying to think of some right off. Some have not yet. They're in the same status we are, you know, legislation pending.
But they all have to.
Mr. Chairman, under the federal law, these practices, including wage assignments, are mandatory practices.
If they want the federal funding.
Right. There are.
Mr. Chairman, yes. I'd like to add to that. It's not if they want the federal funds for child support enforcement. No. The federal funding we're talking about is the federal match on AFDC payments, the welfare program, age-dependent children. We're not talking about the federal match for 4D support enforcement activities.
Mr. Chairman,
right.
Mr. Young is right. It's a strange situation, but the penalty is not against the money to administer the child support enforcement program. The penalty is against the money for the aid to dependent children public assistance program.
Well, let me ask this, and I know we're on the wrong bill on this, but is there a way, we had a bill, I'm trying to think of the bill, what was the criminal records check bill on criminal records background check? What we did is we designed a statute that looked good on paper to satisfy the federal requirements. And we called up Region 10, they said yes, but in reality we're not going to do half of what we said we're going to do in the statute. It was crafty legislation. Forget the author of the bill. At any rate, is there any way that administratively we make things look good? And wait. But where you start the wage withholding thing, but in reality it's going to take 60 days, as Representative Bunn is getting at?
That's a difficult question to answer. The federal government, in enacting the statute, said you not only have to have a procedure in place, you have to use it. And they've directed the Office of Child Support Enforcement to do performance audits. So what they do is they're actually going to come in and look at the cases. We could probably get away with it for a year, but once they start auditing, I don't think you'll be able to do it for 60 days.
Mr. Chairman,
right.
The process started in 30 days would probably not result in a wage assignment going out for sometime after. We started it, for instance, on the 30th day.
Right.
Then a notice goes out. The individual has a period of time to respond to that notice. Okay. Then you have to send a wage assignment to the employer. So it would be some time before it actually occurred. However, the federal government even thought about that process now. Because they have come back and said that mere payment of the arrearage in and of itself would not be sufficient to stop the wage assignment. Now, we have some administrative ways, I think, to set some processes up and find other ways in the rules that we could ease that, find some other circumstances. But we'll be required to put together some rules that says under what circumstances you dismiss it. It is heavy, but they put it on us.
Representative Bunn.
you mentioned that if you didn't start for 30 days, it would extend that. As I recalled your testimony from the other day, you really start that process about 10 days after the payment is missed. Am I incorrect on that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bunn, the wage assignment process, in my opinion, because of the way the federal rules are written, we would have to start the process, and let me start over. Federal rules say that you must place a wage assignment once the individual becomes or in arrears equal to 1 month's support. That's what the federal rules say. My opinion is that as long as we put the notice out to the individual that we're starting the process before they're more than one in arrears, more than 1 month's support, we'd probably be all right. So that could be down the road. Now, my testimony yesterday, I was saying, you know, that you could look at the federal rules and say, hey, you got to do it right away. That doesn't make any sense. The mail's not that reliable anything. There's got to be a period.
Well, to establish what your intent is at this point, if the bill passes, is it your testimony that you would start that process after 30 days?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bunn, no. My intent right now, Attorney Singer, would be to start that before the next payment became due, but probably 25 days, 26 days after the first payment was overdue, in order to meet what I consider to be the requirement. Now, if Mr. Young wants to comment on that process, I'd be happy to have him. He's the attorney. But as I read the federal regs, it requires, and incidentally, referring to Mr. Young, when we do these administrative rules, I obviously consult with counsel. But my impression is that because of the federal requirement that it be done once the arrearage is equal 1 month support, that we should not wait until it equals 2 months support, if I'm making sense. But I think that's probably the only question.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, the way you could get around that and stretch it out to the maximum is you could initiate the process the day before the next payment became due, which will be either 30 days, 29 days, and 30-day months, or 27 days in that rare February that's only 28 days long.
Further question, and then I'll be done because I don't want to stall this. You say the way you could get around that is to do it at 29 days. I'm interested in that. My question is that what you would do?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bunn, I said 25 days, he said 29. I don't have any problem.
But we're not talking about 5 or 10 or 15 or something.
No, sir. I'm sorry I confused the issue yesterday. In the 5 or 10 days, I was simply saying he can't even determine that, or meant to be saying, I'm not sure I said it, but that you can't even determine that the person didn't make the payment on time in 5 or 10 days, because the mail process, you just can't be sure for at least that long.
Well, let me just ask another question, and I'm sorry that Representative Bunn and I are really delaying the whole process here in the Oregon legislature. We're fairly inquisitive folks. Once you've got the wage assignment, you said something there that piqued my interest. Just mere payment of the arrearages is not going to remove that wage assignment according to the federal government. What do they want?
Mr. Chairman?
Advance?
That's right. The federal government says, or the federal rules provide, that the state must set standards, which we would do by administrative rule, for when the wage assignment would be removed. And then it goes on to say that that single standard cannot be simply payment of the arrearage.
Mr. Chairman, I think what the intent of the federal regulations was is you have a case where there's a year delinquency. You find out where the guy is employed, you can suddenly go do your wage withholding order. You walk in, and the guy, he has 14 days after he served with the first notice to respond. He comes in and he pays all his arrearage and says, I don't want a wage withholding order. I think what the federal government was concerned about is that he not be allowed to get off the hook that easily. The opposing situation would be the guy pays every month on time, and then 1 month he's a couple days late, or he goes over the 30-day limit by 2 or 3 days, and he comes in and pays his arrearages in full. I don't think the federal government wants to put the state in a position that they have to put a wage withholding order on there, but they do want to be able to say, hey, on this guy that only pays once every year, you got to meet some additional requirements to be set by the state. I know when I was in the field, I would cite people for contempt. They would come in, they would pay all their arrearages. Sometimes the judge would say, you didn't pay as ordered and you're in contempt anyway. Other times the case would be dismissed. The problem was, what you're really going for is money for the children, at least in the non-welfare cases, and I was working some of those, on a regular sustained basis, because it's impossible for the custodial parent to budget if you don't get it on a regular sustained basis. And that's why they want wage withholding, they want it fast, they want it so that there is regular money coming in and it can be counted upon.
Yes,
Mr. Chairman.
Wait.
Okay, sure.
Okay, I mean, is one of the things you might do then is say you can withdraw the wage withholding if the person has paid in the next one or two succeeding months?
Mr. Chairman, yes. The rules would say that they'd set out some criteria. It wouldn't be a matter of withdrawing the wage withholding. The person could come in and say, hey, I pay every month. It just would never be imposed. The process is, say you get to that 30th day, you send out the notice to the obligated parent. The obligated parent has 14 days to respond. If you come back and there's a response and something's worked out, fine. Nothing else ever happens. If there is no adequate response, the arrearages aren't paid, or it's an egregious situation, then after 14 days, a notice would be issued to the employer to start withholding. And that's the real withholding order. It would go to the employer. The employer has 5 days to start the implementation. In other words, if he gets served on Monday and payday is Tuesday, he doesn't necessarily have to withhold on that particular Tuesday. He's got 5 days. First payday that comes 5 days after service. So we're stretching that process out, including service time, so it's probably going to be closer to a month or 2 months from the time that the person fails to make the payment before the actual first withholding payment is made from the employee's salary.
Mr. Chairman, payment history in the past or after wage assignment, in my opinion, is a criterion that could be used along with the payment in a rule to say that's the circumstances under which you could be a wage assignment. In other words, a good payer caught up.
In terms of, let's take the example you had there where the person's been paying all along, gets late, or the plant shuts down for a month, goes back to work, back, missed 1 month, starts up paying again, even though he's missed the 1 month. If he misses payment for 1 month and pays, but hasn't paid at all the 1 month he owed back, that person is continually in arrearage because he's always 1 month behind on your books.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
Presumably, he would not be behind 1 month very long because the wage assignment would take some money, extra money above the current support, and catch him up.
Okay, I see. All right.
Mr. Chairman, the easiest way to avoid the effects of all this harsh legislation is to pay your child support on time when it's due.
Right, I do.
We're not having kids.
You're not having kids. Representative
Buck. Last question, and this deals with all of these bills. I had a situation where I represented a client, and there was a divorce decree in Arkansas, a separation decree in Louisiana, a divorce decree in Oregon, and a support decree in Washington, and they all dealt with the level of support to be paid, and each one dealt with it differently. And we looked at the Uniform Reciprocal Support Enforcement Act and a number of other things, and Louisiana said, we don't care what Oregon does, we decree that this is the amount of support, and Oregon says, we don't care what Louisiana says, we determine that we have jurisdiction. We have two different levels and a fight there, and the federal government was taking tax monies for the Louisiana decree, even though Oregon said they couldn't do that. And my question would be, what's going to happen in that kind of case with these stronger penalties?
Mr. Chairman, the only state that's really going to be imposing any sort of penalties other than offset of federal tax refunds is the state in which the obligor is located. And the support order that's going to control in the state where that person is located is either the support order that's entered by that state or some support order that's registered. Now, each support order in each of those other states is valid. And if monies are owed to the state, each of those states can request the federal government to offset it. And the offset will continue to occur. In that particular case, if Missouri got to the offset first, because they were the first one into the federal government requesting the offset, they will get the money up to the amount of arrearages that they hold the rights to, and all the other states are required to give credit for that amount of money.
Thank you.
Okay, any further questions on Senate Bill 250? Representative Bond?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Any further debate on questions on Senate Bill 250?
No.
Now, see, earlier you told me I'm a freshman. You said you're not really. You said, you know, anytime I wanted to turn to you, you say the magic word.
Mr. Chairman, you're going to need to get someone else for the magic word.
Oh, that's right. That's right. On this particular bill?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry. Representative. Open to motion. Yeah. One way or another.
Table this? Is that what you'd like to do? Can't table this.
Mr. Chair, I think I will announce ahead of time, for clarity's sake, that the whole area of support enforcement is new to me. I've listened, some of it I feel comfortable with, some of it I don't. And I think at this stage of the session, I may be voting no on bills that may have some good things in them, but I'm real nervous about not all, everything being comfortable. Part of that has to do with just the time in the session, so I need to be clear about that.
Okay, well, to move things along, I guess the chair would move Senate Bill 250 to the full, A engrossed, to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion, Representative Springer.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm ready to support that motion to move it to full committee, which is the next step, but I, though I'm somewhat more familiar with the support enforcement laws just by virtue of being here a little bit longer, I still want to reserve the right to review again this material before or during full committee, and my vote ought not to be seen as committing me to full committee on this.
Aye.
But I'm ready to move it along.
I agree with your statement and would adopt that also. My position on this, Representative Burton.
Sure, I need to understand here is the necessity for Senate Bill 250 as it relates to the federal programs. I understand the necessity of 170 and 171 for that connection with a potential loss of federal money, but I'm not certain if that's the 250 related to that.
It does not. Well, these are more.
Being in the uncertain ground that I am on this, I will vote to pass this up to the full committee as well, but I would also like to reserve my right to take a look at this relationship.
Representative, I
just have a question. There are a lot of significant policy decisions in all three of these bills. I am becoming increasingly frustrated at getting a large number of major policy issues when we're working from 8 o'clock in the morning until 11 o'clock at night. And I guess I'd ask the question, why did these come to us so late? Does anyone know?
One would have to ask the Senate, I think.
Mr. Chairman, these bills, all three bills, were pre-session filed by the Department of Justice. Senate Judiciary Committee did not pass them out until this late date.
I believe we just got 250. The Senate voted on it on Wednesday. As soon as we got the bills, we scheduled them.
Thank you.
We can
do that now.
I know, and I've told other members of the committee, probably of all the bills that we have passed or tabled this session, this issue
touches more people.
touches more people, we will get more phone calls on both sides as a result of this legislation. And it's just a bad way to operate in the process when we only have a few days to study these things. And maybe that wouldn't be so bad if we didn't have about 50 other bills out there that we've got to put a lot of time in. And that, more than anything, is the hesitancy of the members of this committee. You know, if we had more time, we would have definitive answers, yes or no, I like the policies. The other thing that scares me about this legislation is that I am not comfortable in terms of what other legislation in other committees, whether it's in human resources or this committee or perhaps in ways and means, that is moving through the process that may also have an impact on this whole area.
Mr. Chairman, if I could respond to that, I believe you've got all three bills in front of you that are on the child support enforcement area, other than some joint custody bills and those sorts of things. But these are the primary child support bills alive in the legislature today.
Well,
I would note
there's a House bill, though, that we had heard earlier in this committee as an example. And I don't know if it happens in human resources, that had to do with accessing every bank account through a computer in terms of SED enforcement and AFS. Now, that would fit into this somehow, I think.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that bill is dead. I also believe that Representative Bellamy has proposed amendments in Legislative Council Draft Number 4 to Senate Bill 170 that are before you today. Reincorporating all those, or taking all those provisions and sticking them into 170. They don't have very much to do with child support. In fact, hardly any at all. But they're also before you on 170.
Let me further add, I guess, is one of the reasons that I hang up, in addition to the reasons stated. And this is based in part on the 81 experience, which I know Mr. Sitzman is obviously very familiar with. We got very badly burned because we felt, I think, to our defense, that we really had no choice but to comply with federal law. We made a change then that I think we're going to have paid for and will continue to pay for a long time in terms of what the federal government thought was the right thing to do. Now, I don't think anyone here is disputing or has any quarrel with the fact that, you know, support obligations and enforcement are just absolutely essential. There's no question about that. But what troubles me is when the federal government comes kind of a bull in a china shop, particularly here in Oregon, where I think, to Mr. Young's credit and everyone at this table and in this room who works in this area, I think we've demonstrated that here in Oregon we've got the capability to set up an outstanding program that really works well here for the people here in Oregon. And to have the federal government come in and tell us, no, we're going to do things differently and you don't have any choice, it's going to be this way, that way, in light of their experience in the past of really screwing up the works, that too makes me feel very uncomfortable. Aside from our need, I think, to really spend some time looking at some of the policy issues that we may or may not have a choice about, given what seems to be the federal conformity issues.
Mr. Chairman, may I say just a couple of brief comments? Number one, when this bill was before the Congress, Mr. Sitzma and I went and testified in front of the Senate Finance Committee in opposition to a number of the provisions that are now being mandated on you, on the grounds that Oregon had a very effective system and we did not need to be mandated to do certain of these things. That had some effect, but some of it didn't have an effect, and that's primarily because of the large problems that are experienced in states like Pennsylvania, New York, Illinois, that sort of thing. The other thing I would point out to the committee, two things. Oregon has one of the best child support enforcement systems in the nation already. The other thing I'd point out is that there are roughly 45,000 support enforcement division cases being monitored by the Department of Human Resources now, and another roughly 23,000 being enforced by the district attorney. I think the volume of complaints that your offices receive about the way support enforcement is conducted is relatively small, and that most of those complaints relate more to the fact that somebody won't take action rather than to the fact that we're enforcing properly or enforcing too heavily, with too heavy a hand.
That raises a concern in my mind. If in fact you who are operating the program feel that some of the federal provisions were not good, that just reinforces my concern about those. my question would be, if instead of passing some of these bills, we said in good faith, we want to study these during the next interim, and made it clear that we were making progress on that, do you believe that we would face the federal penalties?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bunn, the law mandates that the procedures be enacted and in use within 90 days after the close of the first legislative session that closes after October 1. So this thing's going to get out of here by sometime this month. If you don't hold a special session, then you could argue that we aren't required to have these mandated laws, and I think this is clear in the bill file, you aren't required to have the mandated laws until 90 days after the close of the 1987 session. However, if you have a one-day budget session, the federal law is extremely explicit, saying a one-day session, you are required to do it within 90 days after the close of that session. And I'm concerned that this legislature will be recalled back before 1987 and will not have time to take care of this legislation, that special session.
Thank you.
Well, I guess, you know, my concern, I think that when I say there's going to be complaints on both sides, it's because of we're going to have startup problems, I think. And it's the old glitches in the system. One of the Supreme Court judges said this morning in the case. And that's where we're going to get the calls, I think, is not understanding or glitches in the system. And it could be on the road to be a very good system, but you're going to have a startup problem. There's no question about it. When we discontinued the past system, it was, you know, it was probably the best system in the country. It wasn't perfect. It had a few minor problems at the end. At the beginning, it had huge problems. I don't think we'll have as big a problem as it did when you started that program, because we learned a lot. But there are going to be problems, and there's going to be irate people out there on both sides of the issue that are trying to act responsibly.
Mr. Chairman, parts of the 1984 amendments to the Social Security Act were effective a year ago. Some of the parts of this are re-emphasis on things that our requirements now we're not meeting. And have been in existence for a long time. Some of them are effective October 1st, 1985. The mandatory practice provisions, as Mr. Young said, are either effective October 1st or, as he explained, but there are some parts of the bill that are already effective.
Well, I'm ready to, I don't know if there's further questions or comments. Going to vote yes on this motion. The speaker's been telling me all session, trust me, and, you know, by God, I guess I'm putting on trust in you folks. I mean, your record is there to, Mr. Young, to place some trust in.
Thank you.
Clerk, we'll call the roll, please.
Bunn?
No.
Burton?
Aye.
Peterson?
No.
Springer?
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Representative Springer. Now, are we meeting tomorrow, the House? You know?
I'm sure the House is going to be in session. I have not yet received permission from the Speaker to conduct a full or any kind of committee hearing tomorrow. I intend to go to her. She had asked me yesterday if it were possible for Judiciary, if Judiciary Committee had a full day today, could we complete our work? I told her that we would make every effort and that I had hoped if we had a full day we could complete our work. We have not had anything approaching a full day, but we've been in and out a lot. Obviously we haven't had the opportunity to work in subcommittee anywhere near what the time that we spend here might indicate. So my recommendation to her is going to be that we cannot complete our work today.
Because I think I'd be more comfortable if, even if I had this evening to read these bills over, make a few phone calls to folks.
Well, I am also going to share with the Speaker my recommendation that we and staff and everyone here started at 8. And we have a 12-hour rule for the session itself. And I think that I'm going to be reluctant to work anybody more than 12 hours, because I think the quality of the product declines precipitously.
and we start making big mistakes that bring us back here for special sessions when we work beyond that point. And I hope the speaker will listen to what I have to say, and if any other members want to share that feeling or sentiment with her, please feel free to do so. So I'm willing to work certainly as much as we can this afternoon and into the evening, but I'm not willing to work to some ridiculous hour into the night, because I, particularly in light of the work that we have ahead of us in the next day or more, I think it's going to have a negative impact rather than a positive impact.
Anybody else tired? And fearful of what we do and get worn out. Okay, let's move to the Senate Bill 170. I think we have some amendments to that bill.
Exactly, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, we have heard this bill, and there are basically two sets of amendments.
Okay, wait a minute.
We've got a lot of material on this bill and amendments, et cetera, so we can be very careful in describing and make sure we're working off the same documents.
We're talking about Senate Bill 170. After hearing
have been sent up to full committee, about which I don't think or hope there's much controversy or discussion. There are some full committee bills that I think will take more time. I'm not going to deal with those. Let's try first Senate Bill 236.
Mr. Chair, this bill would remove the minimum $75 mediation fee. The purpose is to allow counties to fully utilize mediation and conciliation services provided by circuit courts in the counties. There was only one witness, that was Bill Linden of the Judicial Department. There are no amendments and no opposition.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
Move Senate Bill 236 to the floor, due pass.
Thank you. Representative Bellamy moves Senate Bill 236 to the floor for the due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
No.
Burton?
Aye.
Miller?
No.
Musen?
Aye.
Phillips?
No.
Springer?
Aye. Motion fails. The chair would serve notice if possible. Pardon me, not being on the prevailing side.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bunn.
I would change my vote.
Okay, Representative Bunn changes his vote to aye. That gives it a 5-2 vote. Any other vote changes? Okay, in light of that vote change, 5-2 is the vote. The motion to refer the bill to the floor passes. Okay. Call the House.
Well,
that was a nice try. Okay, full committee will be in recess until we're excused from the call. Is there any volunteer on 236?
Mr. Chair, I will.
Representative Bellamy, thank you.
I haven't picked up any lead lately.
Okay, we're under a call. Full committee will be recessed until we're excused from proceedings under the call.
That was
a nice thought.
Well, that's kind of fun, Nick.
236 came out on a 5-2 vote. To Representative Bunn changed his vote from no to aye. Representative Bellamy would be the carrier on that. Let's
Chair,
move. Yes.
I'm going to serve notice as possible minority report.
Which bill?
236.
Okay.
All one of
I relate to you if you carry it, but...
You can put the prosecution bill in.
Okay.
I suddenly feel like a lot of more leads coming my way.
Okay, let's try next with Senate Bill 596. That's correct.
Mr. Chair, this was a bill out of 75. It was based on a uniform state law or state laws commission relating to uniform gifts to minors.
Mr. Chairman? Yes, Representative Bond.
I would move Senate Bill 596 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Bond moves Senate Bill 596 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Question? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellamy? Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Bud?
Aye.
Kibitz?
Aye.
Kibitz?
Aye.
Vice.
Miller?
Aye.
Peters?
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. Any volunteers?
Oh, I'll take it.
Representative Kibitzki? Okay, thank you. Okay, let's try the next one, 564.
Mr. Chairperson, this bill relates to personal property tax liens. The bill was proposed by Frank Browner of OBA. The purpose of the bill is to restore personal property tax liens to the pre-1981 law. There was a letter from a David Reese entered in opposition to the bill. I believe Mr. Brunell has talked to the appropriate person, and I believe there is no longer any problem with the bill. There are no amendments to the bill.
Representative Bond?
Chairman, I would move Senate Bill 564 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Bond moves Senate Bill 564 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Peterson, this is the bill that was introduced to correct a misinterpretation of the intent of action taken in 1981 as it relates to personal property taxes and whether or not they have a lien that's superior to other prior filed liens on real property. And as I think was indicated, there's no opposition to the bill, notwithstanding the letter expressing some concern from Coos County, representative of the League of Oregon Counties, or pardon me, Association of Oregon Counties, indicated it's okay. Any further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bud?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Kibitzki?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. Any volunteers?
I would.
Okay. Bellamy, thank you.
Put a PTR program in that too.
Probably not.
Why not?
Okay, are we ready on 508, Council?
This is a bill that has to do with upgrading the statutes that refer to cruelty to animals. You have before you a hand-engrossed copy of the amendments that are adopted in the subcommittee. Basically, the amendments exempt commercially grown poultry from the effects of the first five sections of the Act, redefine livestock to make it more generic, suspend the minimum care that is necessary under the Act in emergency situations only, and require veterinary care that's deemed necessary by a reasonably prudent person. These amendments, three of those amendments were adopted in subcommittee. The amendment that refers to poultry was not adopted by subcommittee, and I must confess that I sort of jumped the gun. I expected Representative Kopeski to make a motion on that particular amendment, and I prepared it and then engrossed it before Representative Kopeski made his motion. The full committee.
Okay. Actually, and Mr. Grayhaven is here, and we, now, so what happened, counsel, is on the dash one amendments, you adopted lines 4 through 11, but not lines 2 and 3, is that correct, counsel?
I beg your pardon.
See, yes or no?
Yes.
I know. Is what the committee did is to adopt lines 4 through 11 of the amendments, but not lines 2 and 3 of the dash 2 amendments. Is that what happened? Or did you adopt all of the dash 2 amendments?
We adopted all of the dash. We adopted all of the dash 3 amendments.
Dash 3? Oh, wait.
Actually, let me explain. We're up to dash 4 amendments. We adopted if you look at your hand and gross bill, we adopted the amendments in line 10. Hand and gross bill.
Right on top, goes in. That's good.
Right front?
Yeah.
There's the stack.
We adopted the amendments on page line, on line 10, on page 1, on line 17, on page 1, on line 1, on page 2, and the amendment that is being suggested to the committee actually is on line 26 of page 2, which says the provisions of sections 2 to 5 of this act shall not apply to the treatment of livestock being transported by owner or common carrier to animals involved in rodeos or similar exhibitions, nor to commercially grown poultry, unless gross negligence can be proven. That's the amendment.
Okay.
Can I make a comment?
Okay, Representative Phillips.
Since I believe I was the one that made the motions originally the other night, we did include on line 6 an amendment that does not include commercially grown poultry.
That's correct, and that's on the LC draft amendments, Council. Line 6.
That's correct. And okay. I guess what Representative has been suggesting is that we move that language to page 2, line 26. I've been advised that's a better location for it than on the front.
Right. Yeah. So what does it take? We with remove, go back to the, restore the original language in line 6.
Right.
And then on page 2, have we adopted that language or not?
We've adopted the language on line 1 of page 2, but not the language on line 26.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kopetsky.
I would move that to amend House Bill A and Gross 508 by on lines, page 1, line 6, to restore the original language, i.e., delete the amendment. And on page 2, line 26, delete nor after exhibitions, insert nor to commercially grown poultry.
Okay. Representative Kopetsky, you're moving the amendments that are indicated on the 614 Hannah Gross version of the bill, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. All members have that before them. Is there any question or discussion on the motion on the amendments? Any objection to those amendments? Not, they're adopted.
Mr. Chair, I have one other question.
Okay. Representative Kopetsky?
Are slaughterhouses exempt from this bill? Or somewhere in the statute. If Mr. Graven says slaughterhouses are not included in this, they get to be cruel to animals.
Can you direct that question to Representative
Kopetsky? Well, I was just kind of asking that, and Mr. Grayhaven's out in the audience signified by nodding his head yes.
He has indicated affirmatively that it is not the intent, and we shall so state for the record that this is not intended to apply to slaughterhouses or wherever such animals are commercially prepared for as food, as carcasses, whatever. Okay, are we clear on that statement of intent? Is there any further discussion? Any further discussion? If not, the clerk, let's take a motion on
Mr.
the bill
Chair,
as amended. Representative Kopetsky.
I move Senate Bill A and Gross 508 as a further amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Okay.
Representative Kupczynski moves Senate Bill 508A, engrossed as amended, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Glenn?
No.
Burton?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Kupczynski?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion is adopted. Representative Bunn?
Mr. Chairman, I'd give notice of a possible minority report.
Thank you. Representative Bunn serves notice of a possible minority report.
I tried to accept out.
Any volunteers on this, Representative Kupczynski?
I think Representative Phillips.
Go ahead.
Representative Phillips? Thank you. Okay. Are we ready, Council, on 177?
Yes. Mr. Chair? I believe, if the chair will recall, we had no testimony on this bill in subcommittee. Ms. Karen Pearson appeared after the subcommittee had adjourned and asked to be heard on the bill. I have copies of testimony from the committee to consider. This is a bill which would allow the Children's Services Division to release pertinent portions of their records to citizen review for their grievance procedure. Be considered. In addition, Representative Kupczynski has offered amendments to Senate Bill 177.
Mr. Chair.
I believe the Hannah Gross version of that is before the committee.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to withdraw my amendment to 177.
Okay. Representative Kupczynski, you want to state just briefly for the record what that amendment is so we understand?
Oh, the amendment would essentially put House Bill 2306 as originally introduced, which was the statute of limitations on child abuse measure that passed out of this committee and passed in the Senate, or passed the House floor, and guess where it is now, into this bill. But I've been advised by counsel that it's a real iffy question on the relating clause, and you know, I'm just afraid that if this issue went to court on a case, that some child abuser get off scot-free on technicality of the law.
Okay, so you're moving to withdraw that amendment, which would have incorporated the provisions of 2306. Is that correct?
Yes, but I see that we have Senate Bill 203 coming up. No, I think it's 203. I'm not sure.
Well, okay, let's deal with 177.
Okay.
Representative Kupczynski moves the deletion of the amendment, the purpose of which was to incorporate House Bill 2306 into Senate Bill 177. Is there further discussion of that amendment and motion to delete? Any objection? If not, that language is deleted. Council, were there any other amendments to the bill?
No, they were not.
Okay. And you've distributed Ms. Pearson's statement in support of it?
Mr. Chair.
And Ms. Pearson is here in case there are any questions. Representative Bellamy.
I move House or Senate Bill 177 to the floor to pass.
Thank you. Representative Bellamy moves Senate Bill 177 to the floor for the due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Glenn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Kupczynski?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion is adopted. Okay, Council, Senate Bill 559. Let me ask, who would like the privileges on 177 carrying that? Representative Peterson?
Sure.
Thank you. Let's try 559, please.
All right. This is a bill that would make it a crime to make, sell, buy, or possess any ammunition, the bullet of which is coated with Teflon or similar chemical compounds, and which is intended to penetrate soft body armor if the person has the intent of using the ammunition commit a felony. The committee heard testimony on the bill. We didn't hear any opposition to the bill as written. The Subcommittee did not amend the bill. There's no fiscal impact, and it was moved to full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. I understand this is a bill which parties have all signed off on, basically. Mr. Ranslam appeared on behalf of the different handgun owners associations and indicated that the amendments made in the Senate satisfied any concerns his organizations had. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bunn.
I would move Senate Bill A. Gross 559 to the floor with a due pass.
Thank you. Representative Bunn moves Senate Bill 559 A. Gross to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellamy.
Aye.
Bunn.
Aye.
Burton.
Aye.
Hill.
Aye.
Kopeski.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Phillips.
Aye.
Springer. Aye. Motion's adopted. Any volunteers? Representative Burton. Thank you. Okay. 203.
All right. This is a bill that has to do with the implied consent procedures in the motor vehicle code. This bill changes the driver implied consent law to do the following things. It removes the requirement that the implied consent form submitted by a police officer has to be a sworn report. It allows the division to immediately remove an implied consent suspension if the division learns that the wrong person was suspended. It establishes specific statutory requirements concerning the information on rights and consequences that must be contained in the notice to be given persons who are arrested under the implied consent laws. And it establishes specific procedures to appeal a decision of its division to suspend driving privileges under this law. In addition, it allows the division to establish by rule the categories of persons who are not subject to the 30-day hearing under the implied consent law, and it assures that a person who received an implied consent notice of intent to suspend could not use lack of notice of defense to a charge of driving while suspended. This was heard in subcommittee. We had we heard testimony from Mr. Tony DeLorenzo and Stephanie Smythe from the Department of Justice. No opposition testimony. There is no fiscal impact that's been indicated to this particular bill, and it was moved from the subcommittee to the full committee with a due pass recommendation and not amended.
Okay. Representative Kopeski.
I have moved some. Oh, I made a mistake earlier. I was talking about 203. It was a different bill number, but anyway, do you want a motion on the bill?
Thank you, Representative Kopeski.
I'd like to move Senate Bill 203 to the floor, A and Gross to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Kopeski moves Senate Bill 203. A. Gross to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Question? Comment? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
He's
excused.
Bunn.
Aye.
Burton.
Aye.
Hill.
Aye.
Kopeski.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. Representative Bunn, would you carry this bill? Thank you. Okay, are we ready on 595? Party line conveyances, uniform debt.
Yes, this is a bill that was heard in subcommittee. It was supported by the debtor creditor section of the bar. We didn't hear any opposition to the bill as written. It basically would put Oregon in the vanguard of having a Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act, and it is actually a revision of the Uniform Fraudulent Conveyance Act, which several states have adopted. The bill was not amended in subcommittee. There were conflict amendments that were offered to the bill so that it would coincide with House Bill 2164. The subcommittee adopted those conflict amendments, and then the bill was moved to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. There were conflict amendments adopted.
Yes, there were.
Okay. Are there any questions about the bill? A motion on the bill as amended? Representative Bunn?
Chairman, I would move Senate Bill 595 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Bunn moves Senate Bill 595 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bunn?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye.
Kapinski?
Aye.
Motion's adopted. Any volunteers?
You're welcome.
Representative Kapinski, thank you. Okay, how about 6:34? Counsel?
This is a bill that relates to cemetery plots. The current state of the law doesn't enable someone who is the relative of the deceased to dispose of remaining family plots unless the deceased gave them specific instructions legally to do so. This bill, as amended, would permit the representative of the deceased owner of the plot to sell unoccupied spaces as property of the deceased estate when there are no existing or vested rights of interment or when such rights have been waived. The subcommittee heard testimony. As I recall, no one testified at subcommittee, but the subcommittee moved the bill to full committee with a due pass recommendation, and there's no fiscal impact.
Okay, my recollection, Sarah Monroe came up after we had already had a chance for a hearing on it. I think you may have discussed informally with members and may have resolved any questions I had. And he indicated he was prepared to come back and testify before it's necessary. However, I think the explanation pretty much speaks for itself. Is there any further discussion of the bill? Is there a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Peterson.
I would move Senate Bill 634 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Peterson moves Senate Bill 634 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Dunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Kapinski?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Any volunteers?
Well,
Representative Kapinski?
Sure. This is Senator Monroe's bill.
Yes.
Glad it's on my paper.
Great. I know you'll remember this a long time. Okay. Are we ready on 254?
Yes. You carry a bill, you're supposed to try and get it passed.
Okay.
All right. This is a bill that came to us from the Senate Judiciary Committee. Basically, there's no provision under the current law which would provide for a time certain in which a foreclosing mortgagee may take possession of property or receive the ransom profits for property when there is an order of default or summary judgment in the foreclosure suit. We heard testimony from the Department of Justice saying the state is having difficulty in foreclosing on property under state-run housing programs. The committee amended the bill to strike Section 2 of the bill because of the insufficiency of the notice requirements and some questions about the constitutionality of that particular section. And they adopted language that would allow a mortgagee possession of the real property within 120 days from the filing of the foreclosure complaint where an order of default or summary judgment has been entered, but not in the case where a rental agreement had been entered into before the complaint was filed. So it assists the Department of Justice, but also protects that tenant's rights. Subcommittee voted the bill to the full committee with a due pass recommendation, and there's no fiscal impact that I'm aware of.
Okay. And these amendments were all adopted in subcommittee, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Is there any further discussion or questions for counsel? Representative Burton?
I would move Senate Bill 2 to the floor as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Burton moves Senate Bill 254 A growth as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Dunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Aye. Motion's adopted. Representative Burton's motion, we'll ask him to carry the bill.
burdens can be left around.
Especially since he's not here.
We should have been signing Bellamy all these.
Okay. Okay, 2215 is right at the top of our agenda. Representative Kapitsky, I think, had been working on that. But, Council, can you, Representative Kapitsky, are we prepared on 2215? Our Council, can you explain perhaps the amendments?
Mr. Chairperson, we have in front of us copies of LC amendments 2215-4. These amendments delete every policy decision in the original House Bill 2215, and what remains in the bill are necessary for conforming reasons. Ms. Elizabeth Stockdale from the Department of Justice agrees with these amendments, and we urge your favorable consideration. These amendments would straighten out the matters that were inadvertently became problems in the 1983 law.
No. Yeah. Okay, well, Council, we have before us, I guess, the amendments which have been processed by but not drafted by Legislative Council during today's date, and those amendments go for 21 pages. And you said these are technical amendments. Does Ms. Stockdale?
We're talking about 2215. She was offered to be here, and I thought I could answer any questions that the committee had. Any specific questions?
Yes.
Yeah, where would you like to start? Representative Phillips.
General questions. Who have these been presented or talked to about, any of the lending loan industry, banks, savings loans?
Elizabeth Stockdale from the Department of Justice, the Judicial Department, and myself.
So nobody from the business sector, either the commercial side or the lending side?
Representative Phillips, they never did appear in the original hearings.
However, these are fairly significant amendments.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Bellamy.
With great reluctance, I move to table House Bill 2215.
Okay. Representative Billman moves to table House Bill 2215. It's a non-debatable motion. Clerk will call the roll.
Billman?
Aye.